years in this pulpit, preaching about a similar approach to this topic. And in that sermon, I introduced my vision of elderhood to you by offering a quote by C.G. Jung, Swiss psychiatrist and psychosocial spiritual theorist. And I want to offer it again because it's not only profound, but because it challenges the ageist culture in which we live. He said, "A human being would certainly not live to grow to be 60, 70, or 80 years old if this longevity had no meaning for the species to which they belong. A human being would certainly not grow to be 60, 70, 80 years and beyond if this longevity had no meaning for the species to which they belong." It is a profound statement. See, old age, as it is called, is not, as I said in October and want to repeat now, it's not just a time when the body becomes increasingly feeble while the mind, heart, and soul simply hang on for the ride. Older human beings have the capacity to experience a natural, and I want to put the emphasis on the word natural, older human beings have the capacity to experience a natural deepening of their humanity and to offer gifts to the world necessary for the survival of the species. Not only in response to this especially catastrophic time of global social unraveling and the rise of fascism, but building from what olders have done throughout human history. For example, there is a current and credible anthropological, archaeological theory about the very early history of our species, that it was not until the third generation of individuals began to survive that we became human. See, grandparents or those in their age cohort were and are needed. Older individuals with the savvy to survive were and are needed in order to pass on critical lore, information, and knowledge, and a holistic vision of life based on longevity that is absolutely critical and necessary to build and sustain lasting, resilient, and wise human culture, and to reveal and tap the depth, power, and wisdom of the human psyche. There's a second quote that I also want to offer, and it's my paraphrase of a piece by Malcolm Cowley, who's a novelist and a literary critic. He said, "To enter the country of old age is an entirely new experience, different from what anyone supposes it to be. No one knows that country until they have lived in it and until they have taken out citizenship papers within its terrain. To enter the country of old age is an entirely new experience." So I'm here this morning to open an ample passageway into that wild, effulgent, yet severely underreported territory, because that domain of human life we are discovering offers us a new vision of humanity, as well as a doorway to an uncharted human potential available to us in our elder years. I'm here to report as well that there are further social, psychological, spiritual, existential possibilities that are available in further decades of our lives that can powerfully and uniquely assist us in addressing the catastrophe that is now swarming through and over the human species and the ecosystems of the planet. That deep territory of aging is in part illuminated by the content of the story that I read you, Another Truer Way, by Reverend Elliot Kemmler. And another part, that's one part that illuminates this, but another part is the process of my choosing or being chosen by that story. See, as I approached writing this sermon, that story simply wouldn't let me go. I said, this is not appropriate for this sermon. And the story wouldn't let me go. Just as the vision of elderhood, liberated from ageism, come into its own in our times, come into a fruitful expansion of consciousness, tenderness, and depth, will not let me go. So I stand before you today. I want to lift up the content of that story now, another truer way, because it's an epic story. And tragically, it is especially relevant to us today, given the barbaric treatment of immigrant children by the current national administration. The tragic fact is, however, that the consistent, horrific treatment this country has perpetrated against children of color is nothing new. It began with the very founding of this country and has continued ever since. But returning to this story, Reverend Kemmerer's story. See, she was inexperienced in mental health issues. And she was new to her profession. But she made a choice. She made a choice to go into the hospital and spend time with a child of her congregation who, by his behavior, was threatening to attempt suicide. That is, that she chose to go into a situation where a fragile, very young human being was struggling for life, struggling for a sense of belonging, belonging to others and to life, struggling for a sense of value as a child person, and for a way to connect again with a healthy and natural growth process central to his development, his evolving personhood. She made a choice to risk that somehow she could make a difference. She could make a difference for him first by consciously and openly entering into his life and the process of the struggle that he was wrapped up in, but second, because she was inexperienced and in many ways unaware of what the psychiatric culture would prescribe for this child, she entered offering the only thing that she had, her loving, intelligent human presence. Older people have to make a similar choice, one that is just as fraught with issues of life and death, with meaning and belonging, just as woven with depths of compassion and tenderness and courage. We elders all enter into a landscape that is entirely new and from whose negative dynamics perpetrated by our ageist culture we cannot escape unless we keep playing. When any of us are faced with a highly challenging situation, at least two things are required. First, that we remain as fully conscious as we are able, and not just in the mind, but also in the heart and the body. And second, that we go with our gut. That is, that we trust our deep intuition to guide us in how to respond. Now, sometimes that intuition is developed through intensive training or tough life experiences. But in life and death situations, that intuitive response very often comes from a place within us that is simply unknown to us, bigger than us, deeper than us, and more tuned in than us. When the child in his sing-song way made declarations about ultimacy, I'm going to jump you, you are doomed, there is no way out. Reverend Kemmerer was intuitively alert, wondering if there was another truer song that he was singing. And out of her deep sense of the dilemma that he was giving voice to, she responded, I am not doomed. There is always another chance as long as you will keep. Bless her. I mean, bless her. She spoke as an elder. You know, what I mean is not that she was the child's elder, but that the wisdom she tapped with her mind and heart and gut is something that naturally evolves for elders in their advanced years. So there's two points necessary to make about that statement, that this naturally evolves in us. There are, I believe, naturally evolving characteristics, abilities, and capacities that arise in older individuals that are just as discrete and just as important as that for my grandson, you know, who at 8 weeks we could say, this is what he'll probably be knowing, this is what he'll probably be doing. Just as discrete as that, there are emergent qualities for people in these decades. And they'll arise, or at least they will push for emergence no matter what we do. They're there. They're part of what life does. The second point, however, is that if we're going to bring those emergent qualities into full fruition, we have to consciously engage them, tease them out, feel them, sense them, get them clear, and then we have to graciously and determinedly give them space to live and thrive, and we have to live out of them. In these traumatic times, in the trajectory of national and global trauma that we've entered and upon which we are traveling, the deep, natural, unbidden qualities that emerge in the latter decades of our lives can offer us essential tools that have the potential to help humankind build resilience for this global storm, a storm that we will not escape entering, for we are already in it. These times we live in indeed are beyond critical, deeply tragic, without precedent, and quite simply catastrophic. It's therefore essential that we encourage all of our human capacities in order to build resiliency and to build rough weather networks of consciousness and engagement and justice seeking. And that's a term, rough weather networks, that was coined by ecofeminist systems theorist and elder John Mason. In the midst of this demanding times, planetary time, it's important to make clear that far-reaching things are happening to us elders. Developmental forces are at work that haven't been studied. They've been largely unknown heretofore, because never before have we had such a mass, such a number of elders alive on the planet. That is, elders, that is, humans who have survived to bear witness and act out of the full vision of human potential and human life. Further, we've never before had the enormous pressure facing us as a result of the multiple intersecting oppressive forces that threaten not only our national life, but the entire planet. The planet we call home. But these multiple forces, all of them, have laid a pathway for the emergence of conscious elderhood. Conscious elderhood. Being conscious about my aging process. Well, as always, when I offer a sermon, I do so with a kind of resoluteness. It's a kind of willful optimism. And when I use that term, I'm reminded of, and it comes from the Italian revolutionary Antonio Gramsci, who claimed he had pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will. Pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will. So I want to use that willfulness right now to talk about one out of the dozen or more dynamics that so profoundly shape our elder years, one that has become a major part of my eighth decade, and that is this: simple survival. Like a large, powerful wave, here in my eighth decade, I have been washed with a deep and stabilizing awareness. I have lived a life. I have a history. I have a history of decade upon decade of living on this glorious and beleaguered planet. I have lived over 27,000 days, filled with experiences of learning, of loss, of joy, of wonder, of depression, love, anger, self-criticism, and self-affirmation. I have challenged hierarchy and been arrested, all the while holding firm to a deep sense of justice and integrity. I've been flooded with anxiety to the point of overwhelm, and I have stood firm in the face of searing criticism and institutional aggression. The child I was knew love, freedom, and abuse. The teen, self-conscious angst, despair, and wild ideas. I've served successfully in 3 honorable professions, and I've been challenged to the point of exhaustion and the heights of gratitude. I felt and lived in the psychosocial spiritual texture of just being alive through decade upon decade of a human life, my human life. I've almost been killed by accident more than 6 times, and I have survived. I am here. I made it alive 75 years. Deep privilege. It is a gift to have experienced that many years and to have simply survived. And it's accorded me a bounty that I believe is true for all of us, who've managed to make it into our 7th, 8th, and 9th decades and beyond. There's a bounty for us. And part of that bounty surely is the capacity to see a wide sweep of human life as one who has been there. I've been there. You've been there. And looking into my life down the long corridor of those years, I have a seasoned understanding, a ripened sensibility of life's complexities, its sweetness, its tragedy, its unrelenting, resolute insistence on the primacy of survival. I've lived long. I've been present. Born with us. And the fact is that just knowing that nowadays has brought something to me, and that is a sense of peace. A deep core of peace for having lived this long. And this is naturally emerging in me. And one of its important practical attributes includes just taking things in stride. I just take things in stride nowadays. Didn't used to do that. And I think that this is a natural outcome of living long. It's a natural outcome that is available to all who arrive here in these decades if we open to it. And the more open we are able to be, the more we allow ourselves to experience that kind of peace and that kind of ease, a great yet gentle paradox descends on us. And it looks like this. We have a long view. We bear a long history that has given us perspective and the capacity to sit with competing realities and facts. You know, living with paradox. We're able to feel the future. Because we've lived through decade upon decade of time, because we have a sense of what that living these blocks of time actually, what happens in them. We know what they offer, how they'll change us, how variable they are, and how much can be accomplished in them. And yet, on the other hand, we know all that, and yet on the other hand, we know ever more surely that we really know very little. And we find that we come to live with the unknown in new and intimate ways. The unknown in new and intimate ways. It's a gentle, astounding, and life-giving paradox that now informs our lives. So all of this, the knowing, the peace, the ease with life, being comfortable with paradox and with the radical unknown, this is a gift. It's an utter and profound gift. I want to close by offering this heartfelt wish that that great revolutionary, evolutionary gift come to all of us. It come to all of us in the fullness of time. In the fullness of time. As my indigenous brother Robert Morales who's locked up in an iron house within the California state prison system, has sanctioned him to say, Itakaye Oyasu.